This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Gary V, welcome to the sounding board.
I am so thrilled to be on the sounding board. Thank you, men. Excited to be here.
Now, you've just returned from a very quick trip to Australia, which we know from your socials was spent mostly in the air rather than in the country, called the Mindset Matters Tour. Despite the fact that it was a hellfire trip and you had sellout crowds in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, how did you find the mindset of the Australian community while you were here?
You know, for the people listening, I grew up in the wine business, and in the late 90s, I was actually one of the biggest wine buyers of premium Australian wine in America. There was an importer by the name of Dan Phillips who was bringing in some really neat wines like Burge Family and, you know, Duck Muck and all these cool wines that became the Australian super premium wine market in 1997 to 2002 was red hot in the US. So I've spent an obnoxious amount of time in Australia by most American standards. This was probably my 11th or 12th trip to Australia. So I've always been a fan of the mindset. You know, obviously there's the language is the same. There's the spirit, you know, and obviously we're generalizing here, but the overall spirit of the Australian hits me well. I kind of like it. And I mean, all parts of it, right? From Brizzy to someone in the middle of Hunter Valley to Sydney, all the different demos, all the different, you know, sectors of Aussie life has always struck me well. And so it's weird. I genuinely felt like a warmth, like coming home kind of. I almost feel like when I went on this trip, it was like, I didn't go to summer camp as a kid, but like, you know how you have like that place you go to consistently? Maybe it's the Jet Stadium, you know, but I can't compare it because that's my favorite place, but it definitely felt very warm. It felt like comfortable. It felt normal. It felt familiar. I had a great trip. The only sucky part was I was on the ground for 55 hours and was in Brizzy, Melbourne and Sydney. So it was a lot of traveling, very little sleep, great crowds, lots of fun chatter, marketing, business, perspective, which is another word for mindset. I enjoyed it a lot.
We're going to talk some digital, we're going to talk some media, we're going to talk some sport and business, but you mentioned wine there. Just before you move off wine, you began your journey in wine long ago with your dad, of course, and your family, and became an online wine sensation as a business owner before you went on to have 10 million Instagram followers and 15 million TikTok and 3 million Twitter, and we'll talk about those investments soon. But the Australian wine business has had not the same journey since. It's big export business for our country, but it's perceived to be quite cheap in the States when you buy a bottle of Australian wine. Now, you talked about premium. We've got challenges in China. If we could give you one job, could you fix the way that wine is represented? Our wines are magnificent, but they're not marketed in the way in the States that they could or should be. How would you fix that?
The same thing I've been yelling about in overall marketing. It's time for us to have a real conversation, which is nobody's as excited about a television commercial in 1977 and 84 as me. I think it was exactly right. I think it was underpriced attention, as expensive as it was. People were consuming an obnoxious amount of television commercials. There was no internet. There weren't that many channels. It was a very obvious medium. I think that when I look at how the Australian wines are marketed in the US that are the biggest brands, or the overall concept of Australian wines, I just don't think it's contemporary enough. I mean, you know, it's not super complicated. You can go to TikTok and Instagram right now, search what Penfolds, search what, you know, all the top brands from the area are doing, Jacob's Creek and all these great iconic brands, including high-end wines that I just talked about, from, you know, Margaret River, all these wonderful wines. And I just don't think they've made a commitment to to social media. Like, let's call a spade. Like, it's time to get over ourselves. Social media is a very, very massive changing the world platform, and the advertising industry continues to spit on it because it wants to be an echo chamber and talk about its own stuff within itself. But the consumer doesn't care about a Cannes Lion. The consumer doesn't care about Ad Age. The consumer cares about, did they see it? Was it compelling what they saw to make them try it or buy it? And I just think that we're being ideological, and I think Australian wines fall into that category.
On that, do you think TV, traditional TV, is dead?
No, I don't think it's dead.
You just think its role in the room has changed and its price is wrong, yeah?
Yeah, I struggle with the overall prices globally. I think it's overpriced. I think that it's a tough medium. I think it's hard to make an interesting 30-second video that runs on a telly. And I think it's I think the inventory is expensive. I think the agencies that charge money to just think and make decks are expensive. And I think production companies that make 30-second videos are expensive. And so, yeah, I think the medium is challenged.
Gary, with all these forward projection views you've always had and embraced and been the trailblazer of, what out of the old school media and out of old school ways would you see as a way of the future as well, as a key part of whatever it is you are thinking about right now?
What are some of the old school stuff that I do like? Well, ironically, look, I actually think television, the new stuff, right? The connected TV, the OTT, where it's giving you better targetability and you can buy it more. Like, I actually am, like, I'm probably more excited about buying television today globally. Like, let's use Australia Sevens, right? Like, some of the OTT stuff and options they're gonna have is exciting to me more than it's, you know, network stuff. So I do think specific TV could get interesting, but I do think creative and production companies have to lower their fees or like find different ways to make it serviceable. I'm a very big fan of out of home in certain scenarios when you can buy remnant outdoor billboards. You know, again, a great billboard on a meaningful highway in Australia might be $8,000 a month, but it might have a 6-month contract and they didn't sell it to somebody else and it's sitting for 2 months and you can buy it for $1,100. So remnant outdoor, I'm obsessed with. And I would say audio. I think there's some really good sneaky buys on drive time radio and podcasting and Spotify. So I think some of those things, my friend, are exciting to me.
Consumption wise, what is the general person who just consumes media going to be doing differently in 5 years' time? How will he or she be consuming most of the media?
5 years' time, you know, I think the phone will continue to eat up, you know, our time. I don't think the metaverse is here in five. I think it's going to be a little bit more than that. I think it's looming. I'm intrigued by it, but it's not there. You know, I was looking at Friendster and MySpace and blogs in 2003, 4, 5, which has really led to my hypothesis in 2020, right? So I think long. Like, this is why I said TV's not dead, because things don't die. They just become potentially overpriced, right? You know, a print ad isn't dead. It's not like it's zero, but I don't think anyone's overwhelmingly excited to pay a fee for a full page ad in a newspaper today, the way like we, the three of us grew up, right? I mean, I used to run an enormous amount of full page ads in the New York Times in the 90s and early 2000s. So now I wouldn't even, you couldn't pay me to do that. You know, it's-
Gary, you've got a long-held ambition to be the owner of the New York Jets, and you love the Jets as a team. They frustrate you like they have me over the years as a Jets fan originally too. Our business, Sports Entertainment Network, we own 5 teams. We're 2.5 years into our journey of owning basketball and netball teams. I'm interested in your thoughts on team ownership. We're seeing media and team and experience and sponsorship and content and the TikTok era all morph into one ecosystem. Do you believe that sports teams globally are on the right trajectory, are going to create content businesses of their own? What's your view? I know that the American market is sky high and red hot, but in markets like Australia and other places, what would be your advice to a team ownership business?
To storytell. Teams become valuable when people fall in love with players, right? So if you look at the history of sports across the world, whether it's cricket or rugby or AFL or NFL, NBA, Olympics, it's all superheroism, right? Like the Olympics were huge because Mary Lou Retton and Mark Spitz, these were like icons, right? Aussie had a bunch of swimmers in the 80s and 90s that caught the country's attention. Basketball, Steph Curry's a little guy. So all the little guys like myself dream like, oh my God, I can play. Like you need someone to look up to, right? Yep. And so Michael Jordan, Steph Curry, and LeBron James are more like Superman and Batman and Spider-Man than they are the normal person. And that's what the NBA's done well. That's what Vince McMahon did well in wrestling. That's not even a real quote unquote sport, but they superheroed them. That's what boxing was. That's what Muhammad Ali meant to boxing. That's what Mike Tyson meant to boxing. So if I own a team, I'm trying to make them a superhero. I own a pickleball team in the US in the pickleball league that's taken off. Yep. And we had 15-year-old turning 16-year-old player, and she was the best player in the league. And all of our strategy was making her a superhero. And so I think superheroism is the name of the game in sports. And so if you own a team, if you're lucky enough to have someone who you can potentially market. Joe Namath, ironically, the Jets quarterback, was one of the earliest marketed football players as a sex symbol, Broadway Joe. You know, he took a picture in Broadway when he first got to New York, and that stuck, and he wore a fur coat, and he was like he was a rock star. He was like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and then he won a Super Bowl in the biggest city in the world. And I mean, I'm literally saying his name 50 years later. Think about that. So, you know, the elements are out there, and those are the things I would think about.
And Gary, when I hear you say that, and then factor in that the Jets have now gone out and got Aaron Rodgers in as quarterback, and you see in recent times the soccer team Miami has brought in Lionel Messi, we see that in American sports, and we get what American sports do with the superhero. I feel it's a trend in Australia whereby each person on a team is supposedly meant to be an equal and no more important than the next person. And I feel we've got rid of the superhero. Would you urge against that view and to reintroduce the superhero?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think the coach and the people that run the team can't do that because you do want the team dynamics, but the owners and the marketing side need to really understand. I mean, that's where baseball lost its way in America. The culture of baseball was like very like old school. A young dynamic player would come along with charisma and the old players in the dugout would tone him down. Bryce Harper should be famous and he's not. To the level he could have been, because the 38-year-old catcher, when he like did something dynamic and he made the fans happy when he came in, he's like, you never do that again, kid. And eventually the system and the sport wears you down. You know, so I think it's you know, it's a tricky fine line. You know, I do think that if it comes down to the player, right? Like if a superstar on a team isn't capable of having humility and bringing his team along, then he or she becomes a big problem, and then you got a problem. But I do think the sport needs to realize it's about storytelling.
I mentioned those two names there, Aaron Rodgers and Messi. Both have made big media moves through their choice or otherwise. Messi's deal, we've never seen tangled up in a media deal like it, the Apple and the distribution and the share of revenue and venue. And then Rodgers and Hard Knocks. So interesting, both your view on both of those deals. And is this a sign of the times?
A lot better than Aaron's. He obviously got a lot of, you know, upside. You know, the NFL's got pretty strong, you know, contracts between players and owners. You know, look, I mean, I think
brought into the U.S. He was basically
media rules the world. First, like, it's why when there's a coup in a country, they go after the radio station
to a partnership.
They go after the television station and the printing press and the paper. And obviously, it's changed in the internet world. But when you see unrest in certain countries around the world, you know, the government literally shuts down the internet. I mean, it's, you know, you're talking about media ruling how people think. And so, you know, what do I think about it? I think it makes a ton of sense. And it's how brands are built. And it's how the world works. And it's how people get interested in things and fall in love with people like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi or a philosopher. It's just, it's what I've always known, that the media and communication and the ability to communicate and understand dictates everything. And again, to put a final cherry, because I have to run, I apologize, because I know this audience, like, you have to realize what's happening in media, which is like, the world's changing. And if you hold on to the past, you get past. You know, a lot of people have feelings about the things I talk about in the industry, right?
Go ahead. My last question, I know you have to go. You're an early investor in Twitter, which is now X. You're an early investor in Uber. You've spotted some of these great trends in digital. Are you a buyer of Elon's strategy turning to X? How do you feel about it as someone supported that platform for a long time and benefited from it?
I'm a buyer of going for it. People forget that Twitter looked exactly the same for 13 years. I'm a buyer of going for it. I have no idea if we'll pull it off, but going for a super app that isn't just Twitter and factoring in everything else makes a lot of sense to me. Why would you not want to grow? But it's hard.
He's capable of doing it, and will the market support him? You've obviously swum against the stream yourself and made an incredible wealth for yourself out of the ad market, despite its traditional legacy challenges. He's an even more of a black hat day one with the ad market, who he has to win over to justify the investment. How does he swing that, and can he do it?
Merit. If consumers' attention is on his app, everybody canceled Mark Zuckerberg too 4 years ago, and they're all running plenty of ads. Like, brands are hypocrites.
If the audience stays, the brands will come.
Brands are hypocrites, and that's okay. I don't judge brands on that. It's very, like, I love that brands are trying to take a stance. There's a problem with that. It's not a sustainable strategy.
Love hearing that. Gary, just as we wrap it up, you'll wrap it up in a minute, but I've never seen this man next to me who's normally composed and was all encompassing with how he controls himself. He's been a nervous wreck today preparing for this.
Please.
And even to the point where he was even earlier than I was today for this. So you've had this effect on him for a long time, and I've now seen it physically.
It's, people ask me why I have so much energy. It's based on what you just, do you know what that feels like? It's so humbling. Like, I know I have big convictions, and I talk, like, I know the passion I speak with, which I know can be misinterpreted as bravado or ego. I get it. Like, I know how I communicate, but man, I have really good intent. And I think there are a lot of people out there. The reason so many people do like feel that way is I think the ones that spend time and kind of can get past the jersey of my communication style, which is hard, you know, because I want everybody to hear, but I also don't want to be not authentic. This is how I talk. These are things I believe in. And look, I do get passion out of seeing opportunities in traditional businesses like the wine business and the ad business. And I do think I end up being historically correct because I'm willing to make less money in the upfront to be right in the long term.
Well, you've always led with, and you've talked about empathy and kindness and more recently candor, which I admire and it's not easy to replicate, but you've done something really good today. You might not be aware of this, but one of our partners, McDonald's around the world, challenged us as part of our McCafe interview series to get you on, Gary V, and they would work with us to donate $10,000 to Ronald McDonald House, which goes towards the amazing kids in Victoria who are displaced from regional homes and their place to stay in the city at Monash and Parkville. So $10,000, which is so many rooms a year. So when I spent a little bit of time with us today, we've been able to work with McDonald's to create that outcome, and we want to thank you for your time and for doing that for the kids here in Australia and for your recent visit as well, which was magnificent.
You know, I go with intuition a lot. I wanted to do this one and for you to end it. I've never had something like this just happen. Thank you. I've always admired what they've done with the Ronald McDonald House. And so to think I can go to the grave and know I had a tiny, tiny 0.000001 impact on what just went down. Thank you. Thank you, men. Continued success. And I hope you're well.